I guess I will.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. Who
say welcome to so far?
Yeah. No, I can figure out what to say.
All right. Is this it? Is this part of it? Oh, have we started?
Guy, this guy's giving Mike. What am I doing here?
I don't know.
This guy's telling me what to say.
Am I
Ron Burgundy all of a sudden?
Reading
off a teleprompter.
3, 2.
Hey, welcome to the debut episode of So Far. Now, what is So Far? Why, first of all, don't these guys have 9 other podcasts? Why is this? What's going on here? Why is this existing? Well, first of all, let me say my name's Tom Sharpling, and I'm here with Jason Gore.
Hello.
AP Mike. I guess not. Did we lose Mike?
I'm here.
There he is. Yeah, there he is.
Mike, and then last but not least, Pat Byrne.
Hello.
How are you? So I'm now okay. What we're going to do is, look, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young have been this bizarre, hyper-fascinating kind of cultural thing that it's one of the, I don't know. I don't even know. I'm figuring this out as we talk. It's the whole thing is it's these two guys, David Crosby, Stephen Stills, Graham Nash, and Neil Young, who had this supergroup, arguably the first supergroup. And they put out records together and in different incarnations. And they've created this insane, huge body of work that some of it is my absolute favorite stuff, like Neil Young stuff. And some of it's my absolute least favorite stuff that's ever existed in anything. And the characters behind the music are just as fascinating as the music, if not more fascinating. And the way they fight and position themselves against each other. It's just, it's four of the most interesting people, regardless of how you feel about their music. So we talked about it and we were just like, what if we did, especially during this current situation, what if we were just like, what if we did like a bonus podcast where we went through the catalog and really tried to get to the bottom of certain things and find whatever truths are there and whatever surprises. And yeah, I don't know. We're going to go year by year through the body of work of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. The four of us are going to go through the four of their body of work. And then we're going to evaluate it and rate it and rank it and discuss it. And I guess the first thing we can talk about is of the four, like if each of us says what their, like what is your relationship to their work? What is your, what are your biases in favor and against members of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young? Like where do you stand with them? So what if we start with, let's start with Jason.
Okay. Crosby, Stills, and Nash was the first concert I ever saw in 1990 at Roanoke Civic Center, Roanoke, Virginia. I hated it at the time because I was purely into Metallica with my mullet and my pube stash. But looking back on it, I look back on it fondly like, man, that was actually a pretty cool show. My mom and dad were both huge Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young fans. Mom never liked Young, hated his voice. So she always supported Crosby, Stills, and Nash over Young. But dad was always more Neil. I saw Neil Young with Booker T and the MGs in 1993. It was one of the first concerts I went to as well. I think that was probably the fifth show I went to with my dad. And then it became like a tradition of seeing Neil every summer with my dad. So, yeah, this is like a big part of my upbringing. Wow. And in terms of like each member of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, there's some Graham Nash stuff I love. There's some Stills stuff I love, especially like Manassas and stuff like that. You know, there's some Crosby stuff that's okay. I don't hate any of them, but I'm pretty much like Neil's my guy too.
Sure. So Mike, what is your relationship to their bodies of work?
Yeah, I started off very young, a Neil Young fan in high school. And then I sort of followed his other endeavors, you know, with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, the Deja Vu album. Then I sort of did listen to the Crosby, Stills, and Nash stuff, and I kind of liked it. What was that big? They had like a double album, live album.
Four-Way Street.
Four-Way Street, yes. I remember, for whatever reason, I don't even think I own that record anymore, but I listened to that quite a bit when I was young. I didn't follow all of their solo endeavors. I didn't even go much further with Crosby, Stills, and Nash beyond like their first two records. So this will be a lot of new stuff for me. Only like a few years ago did I get familiar with If I Could Only Remember My Name, which I like that album.
Which is a David Crosby album from, I think, 1970 or 71.
Yeah.
That's a really it's an album that's grown in stature, and it's a really like highly respected album now, but it wasn't always some reference point for greatness though.
Yeah.
So, but you know what I mean? That was not always something that people talked about as some classic album.
No. I mean, I just became familiar with it, you know, recently, you know, relatively recently.
Sure.
So yeah, a lot of this stuff is going to be new to me. Even the Bird stuff, you know, I mean, I had all those Birds albums, but for whatever reason, I didn't really, they weren't heavily played, you know?
Okay.
It wasn't until they put out that big box set that was very famous, you know, the CD set, and I started getting into them more. But even just going back and listening to the full albums now was, you know, sort of, it was fresh to me, because I didn't really get into those records one by one.
Okay.
Except for Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
Sure.
Which is my favorite Birds album.
Okay. Well, that's... So yeah, you hit it from a different angles than Jason or me. And Pat, what is your relationship to these guys?
Tom, next to nothing.
Good. Well, then that's good. This is the fresh. Somebody's fresh in the mix.
I mean, I like Neil Young, and you know, I like David Crosby's voice, and. Yeah, I mean, I don't know fully how Neil Young. I'm going to be kind of learning from you guys. I don't even know how Neil Young is connected to the band, because he's not credited on any of the album titles, right? So it's always credited as Crosby, Steele, and Nash, right?
Well, the here's the thing: is the first. Well, let's do the history right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like basic history. So of these guys, you have David Crosby, who was. He was in the founding lineup of the Birds in 64, 65. Like he was there for the very beginning of the Birds when it was Roger McGuinn and Gene Clark and Chris Hillman and Michael Clark and David Crosby. And they were a popular Los Angeles band, a band a lot of people called the Birds America's answer to the Beatles.
To the Beatles, right.
Yeah, so that was like in 65, Birds had Mr. Tambourine Man, number one hit, just enormous. So that's David Crosby. And then you have all the way over in London, you have Graham Nash was a member of this band, the Hollies, who were kind of like a Beatle-era beat group. And it was him with, who was he with? Alan Clark was the other... The Hollies were basically two... They had like two front guys, I guess it's fair to say, is Alan Clark and Graham Nash. And they were famous. The Hollies were famous for their like amazing harmonies. And they had a bunch of hits like Bus Stop and Carrie Ann and
Dear Eloise.
Dear Eloise, Look Through Any Window, King Midas in Reverse. Like they had a bunch of legitimate chart hits, and they would come over and play America. Play Los Angeles. So then you have Stephen Stills. Where did he grow up? In Texas?
He's from he kind of moved around a lot. He was an Army brat. He's from Dallas, Texas.
So he was a young guy who was in Los Angeles and on the music scene, and basically, they met this like when he played. They met this guy Neil Young when they played in Ontario. When Stephen Stills was up there with a band, right? Correct me if I'm wrong on any of this.
No,
and then they were like they met Neil Young, who was a young Canadian guy who was in a band called the Mina Birds, who the other guy in the Minor Birds was Rick James, like the Rick James was in a band, a pre Buffalo Springfield band called the Minor Birds. And then Rick James was like AWOL from the Army. Am I right on that?
You're right on.
And then he kind of got caught by the military police and that broke the band up. Neil Young goes to Los Angeles to look for these guys he met, who I think he met Richie Fury and Stephen Stills, probably.
Yeah.
And he drives from Toronto to Los Angeles in a hearse.
With Dewey Palmer.
With Dewey Palmer, who became the drummer of Buffalo Springfield. They're looking around for these guys, and they don't find them. They're about to leave town, and then Stephen Stills and Richie Fury spot this hearse with Ontario plates, and just as they're literally about to leave town and just go home, and then they kind of pull them, they pull them over, and it was that was the like then Neil Young stayed, and Dewey Palmer, yeah,
they stayed, and then they hooked up with
Messina? Who was it?
It wasn't Messina. Richie
Fury, Stephen Stills. Oh, it's crud. I'm
Bruce whatever. Palmer.
Bruce Palmer. That's right. Not Jim Messina. That's Pope.
It's Bruce Palmer and Dewey Martin.
Yeah.
That's where we're getting the mix up.
Yeah. So there basically Neil Young decides to stay in Los Angeles, and he forms Buffalo Springfield with this guy, Stephen Stills. And then you have on the scene, Buffalo Springfield and the Birds are kind of friendly rivalry kind of bands. And they even overlapped a little bit. There was a show that Neil Young didn't play. And then David Crosby jumped in with Buffalo Springfield at the Monterey Pop Festival in 67, I would think that was, right?
Yep.
So then Graham Nash, they knew... Crosby and Stills knew Graham Nash was an amazing singer. Graham Nash was getting restless and wanted to get out of the Hollies, I guess, or just get something else going. And they kind of poached him from the Hollies to form a band with Crosby and Nash. And Buffalo Springfield broke up. David Crosby got kicked out of the Birds, and that freed up Crosby and Stills. Nash leaves the Hollies. The three of them start this ostensibly a super group in 1969.
Yes.
69. They play Woodstock as their first huge, I mean, their first legit appearance, right?
Yeah. Oh, it was actually their second gig. I think
that's right. Yeah. But it was so they were so new. So they played Woodstock, and they recorded this album, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and it blew up. It just, like, became enormous. And then they were trying to put the lineup together to go play live, and they're like, well, we need another guitar in the lineup. And Stills was like, well, we should ask Neil Young if he would want to be a part of this, because he can write songs. And, you know, they thought about John Sebastian at one point from Love and Spoonful, but then they went with Neil Young, and then it became Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And the whole point of the thing was that you could just be your, it was about four people. It wasn't just a group called like the blah, blah, blahs or the whatever. It was like, no, we are the individuals, the three or four individuals, and we bring our full personalities to this. So for the second album, Neil Young was a member of the group, Deja Vu. Was that the second album?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like in a nutshell how it started. But and then Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, like Neil Young was arguably the least famous member of the whole thing when it started. And not even arguably, just I think it's inarguable.
Yeah.
That when he joined, he was the least known person, but then he started his solo career, and within 2 years, he had Heart of Gold and became just a superstar in his own right, which made Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young just exponentially more popular, and they were just playing football stadiums once the 70s got underway. And they would each check out and do things together. They would do their solo albums. They would split off and do albums together, like Stills and Young did an album. Crosby and Nash did an album. Like they would just constantly be making music and overlapping and sharing things, and they would come together and they would go apart, and Neil would check in and out with them and could kind of use the band as a bargaining chip, because if it was Crosby, Stills, and Nash playing somewhere, they were 10 times as popular when it was Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And the money was just undeniable. So they always had that kind of hanging over their head, was the power that Young had. So it was very interesting. The power dynamics are insane within this band, and really interesting. Because if you had to boil each member down, like, how would you define Crosby, Jason?
Broken, but very cocky. Big ego, talks a lot.
Self-admitted just that he's a jerk. Like, he's the first person to say, I was such a jerk back then. And, yeah, I think one thing that they all have in common, these four guys, is just towering egos.
Yes.
Like they all think they're the star of the show.
Yeah, very much so.
And
they're all, in their own way, jerks.
Yeah.
Even Nash, I mean, he seems a little more humble than the other three.
I would say he's probably the most humble, but even then, like, his ego is way up there.
Is it? Okay.
Oh, yeah. If you listen to this David Brown audiobook, or you could read it in actual book form, I don't know, it's pretty embarrassing to reference a thing as an audiobook first. Makes me sound like an imbecile.
Yeah. Have someone read this to you.
Yeah. You know, they put that audiobook out in printed form also. Oh, you mean a book?
What?
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, Nash was had his own brand of egotism going on. He was politely in the book is referred to as a coxman. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Where he would sleep with anyone's girlfriend or wife.
Oh, okay. He would swoop in.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he was just unrelenting with that. And and I'm not even putting a judgment on that. I'm just saying that I'm just trying to give you an insight into the kind of guy he was. Yeah, so he was kind of like Nash is like a lightweight. He was more poppy than anyone else in the group.
And he had the pop hits too.
He wrote pop hits with that. I mean, Crosby was an egotist and just thought he was special in some way, got booted out of the Byrds for being insufferable. And could never, like, write the big hit, though. Like, that's the one thing. He never was the guy behind the big hits. But he wrote really interesting things that were not nearly as conventional as like, Nash would do. Like, he always had this, like, jazzy bent to some of his composition, to where, like, Miles Davis wanting to cover, like, Guinevere is very telling that Miles Davis wanted to cover a Crosby song.
Right.
Stills was kind of like
cocky.
I don't know. Cocky also, yes.
Cocky. I think having a
very Texas way, like a very
very like military. Though he never served, but he would wear, you know, like an outfit.
Yeah, he would be into like either paramilitary outfits or straight up football jerseys. Like way like you want to talk about being pioneering. Stills is the guy who popularized football jersey, like wearing a jersey with another person's name on the back. Stills is one of the early adopters of that.
Yeah.
But he also was definitely the driving force of the early era of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, like his production skills and his arranging. Like he could arrange somebody else's song and bring the best out in it. His guitar playing is outstanding.
Well, he played all of the instruments on the first record.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was in the studio just fueled by cocaine.
Who did?
The guys would just step out and then come in, sing their parts, and then Stills would be there until the morning, fueled by cocaine.
Yeah, because weren't they called, like, when they first, like, recorded something and like, leaked it to radio, they called themselves the Frozen Noses. Which is some pretty sweet Coke lingo.
Yeah. But I would say also, like, I feel that, you know, Stills was a driving force, but I do think cocaine was a huge driving force for this band.
Okay.
So they did it throughout the entire history of Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
But cocaine is the fifth member.
Fifth member.
Yeah.
Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, and cocaine.
Okay. So that's Stills. And then Young is the guy who is just the dances to the beat of his own drum, does literally whatever he wants, and can just vanish on people. Yeah. Whenever he wants, he would just leave a thing midstream. They'd find out he was gone the next morning if they're recording an album and he wasn't feeling it.
He left Buffalo Springfield so many times.
Yeah. And he was definitely had a competition going with Stills in Buffalo Springfield. Like they were the two front people in Buffalo Springfield and the two primary songwriters. And yeah, so that's everything that led to these guys all intersecting and becoming Crosby, Stills, Nash, and then Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the catalog. We'll do a couple years in per episode. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Right?
Yeah.
So today, this is the introductory episode. So we're gonna just discuss pre-CSN stuff. And just to give context for what each person did within like the band before they entered this period that we're going to go fully into. So what are some things we want to track through this? I think some big goals would be, and we don't even have to do this for this one because this is pre when the run starts. So this would be like episode zero in a way,
right?
Like, but some of the things we can rank, I would love to be able to come away from this saying without a doubt what the worst song on any of their records is. Like at the end of this, to be like the worst song that anyone in Crosby, Stills, Nash, or Young ever recorded is blank. And some people are going to just say it's probably the disco song Stephen Stills did and that we can just stop doing this right now.
Right.
That's what I want to get from it.
Uh-huh. Oh, I've got some nominees.
Yeah, no, I've got plenty.
But we're going to go through it and we're going to get to the bottom of it.
We're also going to talk about the best too. So we're going to do the best and worst.
This is not some hatchet job thing. We're going to talk about the great stuff, the not great stuff, and all of it. We're just going to get, but we should set some specific goals. Like what is the worst song within a certain year for each year? What is the worst song between the four of these guys? And what is the best song between the four of these guys?
Yeah.
So we can track best and worst. We should track true cringy moments.
Oh no.
What's that?
We called that segment Oh No.
Oh no, that's right. Yes. We call that Oh No.
Oh No for cringe moments that covers drugs, musical choices, personal choices, fashion, bad album covers, etc.
Exactly. And if anybody amongst the four of us has ideas for other things we should track, let's keep that in mind. If you have any now or you want to come up with any, we can, you know.
We also have monumental moments. So we kind of talk about, like, I would say the two cars passing where the members of Buffalo Springfield recognized each other and saw a hearse with, you know, Ontario plates. That's a monumental moment for Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yes, absolutely. So
who had the best year? Who had the worst year?
Exactly. We can do all of this while we figure out who these people are and what then and what they made.
Do we rank the members?
Yeah, we rank the members for each year. And we can even do an episode zero ranking just of the
members. Oh, easy.
To see who was 1 through 4 for the pre-CSNY years, before pre-69. So let's start with the Byrds, with Crosby. There were four Byrds albums, Crosby was on 5 Byrds albums. There's still traces of him on the 5th album, Notorious Byrd Brothers, even though he was out of the band. Some of the recording and some of the songwriting he is responsible for. But the main things are the first album, Turn, Turn, Turn. Oh, no, the first album was Mr. Tambourine Man, then Turn, 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 Fifth Dimension, and Younger Than Yesterday are the 4 that Crosby was an active full-time member for those.
Now, are we looking for the best Byrd song or the best Crosby Byrd song?
Well, I think we don't have to be as specific on this because each member was kind of... Crosby was arguably the 3rd, if not 4th, most important member of the Byrds.
Yeah,
behind Roger McGuinn and Gene Clark and Chris Hillman. You know, Chris Hillman writes So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, and they just have... They were just bringing more to the table. I mean, Gene Clark was just a genius, I feel.
Yeah, completely. I don't know.
We can't ignore the fact, and this, you know, I sort of listened to the records one after the other. We can't ignore the fact that Bob Dylan is really sort of also a member of the band, since they're covering so many of his songs.
Yeah.
That drops Crosby's ranking as well.
Yeah. I always saw them as kind of a glorified Dylan cover band.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I was curious. I mean, it goes on, you know, through all the records. They're still doing Dylan covers, I guess, until the Notorious Byrd Brothers.
Is there one on? I don't think there's a Byrds cover. I mean, a Dylan cover on.
There's one on Sweetheart of the Rodeo too. So it keeps going.
Yeah.
Fifth Dimension didn't have one.
Fifth Dimension and Younger Than Yesterday don't have any Dylan on them.
Oh, okay.
But because that's like Gene Clark really like on Fifth Dimension, which is my favorite. That and Notorious Byrd Brothers are my favorite Byrds albums. Like that's when Gene Clark got booted out midstream, and so then you have more David Crosby songs on the record.
You do have My Back Pages on Younger Than Yesterday, though.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. Yeah,
oh yeah, of course. Pages. No, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. I missed the biggie. Yeah. So, but on Fifth Dimension, he did not. So.
I just wondered listening to these albums if like I mean that was sort of common things that they did back then. Everybody was covering each other's songs. It wasn't such a big deal. But I just wondered if Dylan ever got annoyed that here's a whole band. It's kind of like just half their act is like doing covers of his songs. It just, you know, I'm sure, well, Mr. Tambourine Man was a pretty big hit. So,
you know. But you could make the case that all of these bands were, that's how Dylan was getting rich was because Sonny and Cher are doing All I Really Want to Do, and the Turtles are doing It Ain't Me, Babe, and the Byrds are doing song after song. And it's like the Byrds kind of, maybe they didn't introduce it. I don't know if somebody was ahead of them, but they were the ones that popularized the idea of covering Bob Dylan and taking these folky songs and turning them into rock songs.
Did Peter, Paul, and Mary, were they before with Blowing in the Wind?
Yeah, I guess they were ahead of it. But I mean, just in terms of actually appealing to like kids, though, to like the Beatle era.
Yeah.
Like the Byrds suddenly, Bob Dylan was the architect of all these hits, you know, and they're I don't think Dylan, maybe he didn't respect it, but I don't think he could have been.
I don't think
he's ever been too down on it.
Yeah. He was getting paid well. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you know. Yeah. So Mr. Tambourine Man was so huge of a hit, and that's also just like a reputation maker for a different crowd for people who weren't coming out of the folk background where they were just, you know, Because Dylan also, you figure 65, that's when Dylan's starting to get closer to these guys, if anything, by adding rock full instrumentation to his records.
Yeah.
With Bringing It All Back Home was the first one that was like half full band and half solo. Right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when my favorite Pete Seeger wanted to get his axe and chop the soundboard because he couldn't handle the idea that he was doing he was playing with a rock group even though the album had been out for 4 months. I don't know if these people were, that's the one thing I'll never understand. They were acting shocked that this guy had a rock group with him. The record had come out already. Like people, when people are yelling Judas at him, that he was touring behind an album that had like Subterranean Homesick Blues and Maggie's Farm that were just like hit songs.
But was the Electric Band experience with Bob Dylan at that time live, was that just, you know, kind of like how people would say The Who were a live experience, they were loud, and then on the records it didn't show. Do you think that it was a shock of just a loud band in front of them?
Maybe it might have just been the volume of it. I don't know, but it seems so dumb. I don't know.
Yeah, completely.
They also just don't like that their folk hero was suddenly interested in what they thought was just teeny bopper stuff. They didn't like that part of it too, because he was their guy. They already didn't like when he stopped writing protest songs, and then started writing love songs. They already thought, people were already down on him for that. So the Birds start off. David Crosby is not the lead singer of the Birds. It's Roger McGuinn and Gene Clark sang the songs. And David Crosby was singing, but he was not the lead singer. And he was not the front man. And he was also, I guess, best known for wearing this kind of like, what would you call that thing he was wearing? This cape, right?
Well, he had two. Yeah, he had the cape, but then he also had the Russian outfit too.
Yes, he also would. He went from wearing, because first of all, he started off and he had this like this bowl cut, like a beetle cut, and he immediately started losing his hair. And I'm not putting anyone down for losing their hair, but he just started losing his hair. So suddenly his look changed midstream. He started wearing this like this babushka on his head or whatever you call it. he's wearing one of those Soviet hats, like a Dr. Zhivago hat or something.
Yeah.
So that was his look. And then he kind of made his way up front and started writing a little bit. He wrote, I guess his first credit was Wait and See, was the first co-writing thing. But I guess his big songs in the Birds would have been, I don't know what, like Everybody's Been Burned?
Everybody has been burned before.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably his biggest song
that he did, because that was like a solo number, and that's my favorite. That's my favorite David Crosby song. It's one of my favorite songs by anyone.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite Bird songs.
Everybody's Been Burned.
But then on the same album where he does something as good as Everybody's Been Burned, he does a weird one with Mind Gardens.
Mind Gardens might be the worst Bird song.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, there was a garden.
Well, I have another nomination for that, but Mind Garden stood out as a classic, what I call 60s excess song. You know, in the 60s, in the 60s, you could just get away with stuff you couldn't get away with today. Mm-hmm. And Mind Gardens definitely falls into that category. My nominee, and I was concerned. I thought, listening to the Notorious Bird Brothers, I thought that was more, like, particularly the first half, I thought that was more David Crosby was was involved. It had more of the David Crosby vibe on that first half of the album.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Draft Morning was a Crosby song that was, you know.
But then we were talking about cringeworthy. Yeah. I mean, to me, Triad has got to be up there.
Yeah, Triad, his ode to group sex.
You want to know how it will be, me and her, for you and me.
Yeah.
He could not convince the birds to record, so then Jefferson Airplane did it. And it's just, I don't know. That's not one of my favorite songs.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
I'm just saying the way he does it, there's something creepy. The concept is not creepy. His interpretation of it, he just sounds like some lounge lizard on it. I don't know.
Roger McGuinn called it a freak out orgy tune. Yeah.
That's his freak out. So that was his freak out orgy. I'm still going to say Mind Gardens is worse than Triad.
I'd agree with that.
Mind Gardens is so post. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
No. You'll finish what you're saying about that one.
I was going to say, it just feels like everyone trying to be trippy and failing miserably.
Yeah. I mean, listening to these records, again, this is pretty fresh to me, listening from beginning to end. And you could just hear, you know, I mean, the first album was great. I mean, it's like, to me, it's like one of the best debut records to come out, because they had such a unique sound, and it's there in the very first album.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, wow, you know, they've got their thing down, and it's great, you know. Mm-hmm. So that record is good. Turn, Turn, Turn is also very good, but it's got a weird, the weird cover of Oh Susanna comes out of nowhere.
Will I come from Alabama with the banjo on my knee?
You know, like, where did that come from? I was wondering if they thought they could just put like a bird's, you know, twist to every song under the sun. And
I think if Turn, 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 which was like Turn, Turn, Turn is like a folk standard,
right?
I guess they must have thought, like, yeah, we can do whatever we want. Yeah.
Looking at that information up, Roger McGuinn told the journalist Vincent Flanders that he was dissatisfied with Oh Susanna, saying it was a joke, but it didn't come off. It was poorly told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say that sounds like it sounds like somebody kind of saving face a little bit.
On Younger Than Yesterday, you also have the 60s excess, I'm calling it, CTA 102.
Yes.
Which is, you know, what was that all about?
CTA 102, we're open here receiving you.
Yeah, it's not a good one. Every one of these records has one kind of, like, they all have a little bit of a trippy... A brain expander that doesn't work.
And you can hear that they had listened to Revolver, so there's a lot of that sort of that tape sound, like backwards rolling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's on there.
That CTA 102 is big on that.
And then on Notorious Bird Brothers, they discovered the sitar.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you get a lot of... You get a lot of that, and then, you know, they've got that instrumental, Boo Graga.
Yeah, well, that was a bonus track to their... That didn't make the... Boo Graga was not on the original thing, is insufferable. Yeah. That's just like... that's a rough one.
Okay.
I mean, Space Odyssey to me on that one is... Is right neck and neck with it in terms of... Yeah. But when you look at them, when Fifth Dimension has like 8 Miles High, which I think is one of the best songs to come out of the 60s, and that's one that was David Crosby, Gene Clark, and Roger McGuinn wrote that. co-wrote that. And that was just like, that to me is the Byrds. That album is the Byrds at their peak, because it's they're getting a little trippier, but they're still, it's still manageable. And the songs are really good with like What's Happening and I See You and Mr. Spaceman. And they're just like, they're really, I don't know. I just, I love that to me is that and Notorious Byrd Brothers, like I said, is, are my favorite Byrds album. Sweetheart of the Rodeo, I like it. I almost don't even think of that as a Byrds album in a strange way. I think of that as like, that's like a, it's like Graham Parsons jamming with the Byrds.
Yeah.
Album. Like,
so. But McGuinn has some good songs on there. I mean, again, they're Dylan covers, but, mm-hmm. you know, to me, that's their solid record for me from beginning to end. But you're right. I mean, Graham Parsons is in there, and it's actually, I think that may have sort of lured me back to that record, you know, when I got to Graham Parsons, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, I knew he had a couple songs on there, but I never really listened to the whole record a lot. And then, yeah, I just went back, and to me, that's like, that's my favorite records of the first six albums.
Sure. And that's, they've since released the stuff where, because they had wiped a lot of Graham Parsons' vocals, I think, due to contractual. Was it contractual stuff? I can't remember what it was.
Oh, yeah, really? I didn't know that.
Like that. Yeah.
But I love that album. That's one of my favorite albums of all time. But for some reason, I never went anywhere else in the catalog. I just, someone got me into that album. I love it. I know it front to back,
sure.
But I don't know any. I don't really know any other Byrds albums.
Well, because the funny thing is that album is such an anomaly in their catalog, because Graham Parsons was out. He didn't stick around after that, and then
Parsons.
Yeah, I mean, he was just like this kind of like this comet that ran through this band within like a year or however long he was out as soon as he was in.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're going to replace David Crosby, it was a hell of a replacement.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive that they made that album, and then they ended up kind of being slightly jammier, and they put out a double album that is one album is live, and one album is new studio stuff that was called Untitled, and that was them kind of getting their feet back on the ground, and that has the song that I've discussed on the best show for 10 years is Chestnut Mare, Roger McGuinn's weird love song to a horse, and him trying to capture the horse. Very strange. So Crosby was in a band that had a lot of big personalities. The Byrds had a lot of big personalities right off the bat between Roger McGuinn and Gene Clark and Chris Hillman, and then so he was considered like a jerk by the standards of people who were also not wallflowers.
Right. They were trying to be more serious, and Crosby was the guy standing on stage telling everyone that, you know, JFK was shot from three different people.
Yeah, like he would go on in a concert, he would start talking about the JFK assassination, which was at this point 4 years ago. Like, he was telling everybody that it's a government cover up, and so that's, and that the other guys in the Byrds just could not handle that, and they fired him. And then on Notorious Byrd Brothers, the cover, they replaced David Crosby with a horse on the cover, which I guess retrospect, I'm sure Roger McGuinn came up with that with his loves those horses. He loves those horses. Yeah.
And for more evidence of this, I don't know who had control of it. I wasn't even aware of it. Listening to the Notorious Byrd Brothers on Spotify, mm-hmm. there's a hidden track at the in the last song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically Crosby getting into a fight with the drummer Michael Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because, you know, it's, you know, that's what he's known for, being an ass, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you here's first hand evidence, and the drummer is just so annoyed. And Crosby is just like trying to coach him what to play, So at one point, Crosby says, don't play, you know, clip clop like a horse. And so then they start to take, and that's literally what the drummer does. I mean, it's hysterical. it just breaks down when it, you know, when he does it, you know? I encourage everybody to check that out. You have to go into the last track about halfway through.
It's okay.
Like a 13-minute track, and then you get this studio argument that breaks out. It's really funny.
Okay. What would you say, everybody, what is Crosby's high water mark and low water mark in the Birds? I'll say it's Everybody's Been Burned.
Yeah.
And Co-Write and 8 Miles High, and then Mind Gardens is the low point.
I would agree with that.
What album is Everybody's Been Burned on?
That's on Younger Than Yesterday.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because all right. Because I thought it was sort of a drop off from the first album through the mm-hmm. third album. You know, I liked. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, Spotify. There it is. Okay.
So what do you think? What are your thoughts then, just off the top of your head, Mike?
Yeah, no, I liked. Yeah, that's a good song. So yeah, I would say that, you know, I'd have to go back, but you know, the like I said, the first side of Notorious Bird Brothers, I thought that was mainly Crosby, like going back. Mm-hmm. Is that him?
Well, Draft Morning is the biggie he has on that record. That but one. But he's on the record.
Yeah, but yeah. Then he was also part of Tribal Gathering and Dolphin Smile.
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. So
okay. These guys sure like nature a lot.
They really do.
All these guys. They're singing about whales and dolphins.
Well, that was the hippie dippy vibe at the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they also like sports cars too.
And cocaine.
And cocaine. Do you think anybody in Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young? Oh, okay, here we go. Of the four members, you know what I mean? Who has done coke off of a horse? Like, who actually chopped a line up on a horse? And then
I think Crosby chopped the line up, and I think Stills swooped in and snorted it.
Okay, so you think of the four members? I'm going to say Crosby and Stills have done coke off of a horse.
Yes.
I can just picture. Young has also. I can say Neil Young has too.
Yeah, I can just see them all laughing around the mm-hmm. horse with a little like white dust on it.
Yeah, Mike, who's done coke off of a horse?
Crosby. Yeah, I would say everybody but Nash.
Everybody but Nash. Okay.
Yeah, Nash Pat. Just thinks it's silly. He's not on board.
Yeah, Pat.
I wasn't aware of his his cocksmanship. I haven't read a whole lot about the band, but maybe he would be more busy doing that than the coke.
Yeah.
He probably would be. They'd be going out to the stable, and he'd be like, I'm going to hang out here and back in the living room uh-huh. with one of your girlfriends. Pat, who's done coke off of a horse?
Based on everything I've learned, David Crosby.
You're going to say you're sticking with just David Crosby.
Based on everything I've learned today, yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah.
So that's the Birds.
That's the Birds. Mike, high water mark, low water mark?
High water mark, still Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
okay, but that's, yeah.
Everybody's Been Burned, though. That's, yeah, I agree with you. That's probably his best song.
Yeah, and he was not the most prolific guy either. That's one of the things. That's one of the knocks on Crosby. Is that he's not the most prolific guy, and oddly enough, now at this late date, he is the most prolific of the four of them in a way. Like, he puts an album out every year. Like,
yeah,
and it took him 40 years to get to this point, and now he's like regularly puts albums out and plays live and is shockingly prolific.
Yeah, I would put him right up there with Neil in terms of just output right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the last almost decade. Okay, Pat, any thoughts on the Birds? I know you're a sweetheart dude.
Yeah, I love that album, and there's they're never a band I've disliked. Anything I've heard, I've always enjoyed it.
Now, Buffalo, let's do the Hollies real quick. Okay. I don't have a whole lot to say about the Hollies.
They've got some great songs.
Yeah, they have great songs. Not my favorite band. No. Great singles. The album's not so much.
Yeah, they were 100% a singles band.
Yeah. Mike, any thoughts on the Hollies?
I only owned one Hollies record, and it was the Greatest Hits album, so mm-hmm. Yeah, limited info on them.
Sure, but you like the hits.
Yeah, the hits are good.
Yeah.
I'm in a similar boat. I have one album. I don't think it's a compilation of some kind, whether it be, you know, BBC Sessions or something. It's not like an album, but mm-hmm. I know their choice songs.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I you know, I think the Hollies are worth pointing out that they had a song called Ye Olde Toffee Shop.
I was going to bring that one up.
I press my nose against the pane of the little toffee shop.
Which is maybe the most British thing I've ever heard in my life.
But not really a good song.
No, it's not.
They also and I doubt it was even a good toffee shop.
No. Jason, what other Holly song do you think? Let's see what kind of ESP we have going here. Is there another song title that you think I would respond to that the Hollies had? And it also, again, not a great song.
Okay, give me a second here.
Let's see.
Okay. Oh, there's so many, man.
Give me one. Just
what record is it on?
What was that? Was it on Butterfly, maybe? I don't know.
Was it Charlie and Fred?
Not Charlie and Fred. No, Pegasus the Flying Horse.
I was going to say, my second choice was, is it Pegasus?
And then in parentheses, the Flying Horse.
Faraway lands, you can travel with me. I'm Pegasus the Flying Horse. I'm Pegasus the Flying Horse.
So yeah, so the Hollies, people considered the Hollies to be like a solid pop group.
Yeah.
And
they had some solid hits. I mean, some of the hits, you hear them on an oldie station, you're like, oh, cool. I'm hearing Bus Stop. That's great.
Yeah. Stop. And then Stop, Stop, Stop is a great song. And
I like On a Carousel.
Yeah.
I like some deep hits like Sorry Suzanne was probably mm-hmm. one of my favorite pop songs. Yeah, so they had some great songs.
I saw Elvis Costello do King Midas in reverse one time. It was amazing. The great
Posies do a great cover of that too.
Who does?
The Posies.
The Posies, yes.
Yeah.
Another good band. So the Hollies, we're just going to say they're kind of whatever.
Yeah. And the funny, like another thing that goes back to Dylan with the Hollies is one of the reasons that Graham Nash left the Hollies is because they were in production on an all Bob Dylan record.
Yes.
And he didn't want to be part of that.
No.
So,
and that's when he started coming to LA and sniffing around and
sniffing in all kinds of different ways.
Yes.
Hey, you went for that. Studio went for it. I didn't go for it.
There's different others. They could be coke. It could be other things.
On the mic, that's one from Mike.
He took one from Mike's playbook.
Yeah. I think I earned some respect right there.
Yeah, that was a patent. Yeah. That was like a patent move. Like Dudio could say, I read your book, you magnificent bastard. So then there's Buffalo Springfield, which is a very interesting group because you have Stephen Stills, a guitar player, a singer, and a songwriter, and you have Neil Young, a guitar player, a singer, and a songwriter, who are kind of like sharing co-leads in this group. And it seems very, I don't know. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, they all have their, yeah, they're all leads. I mean, Furey is a lead as well, I think.
That's true, yeah.
Because his voice, I mean, he even sang Neil songs on the record.
Yeah, like nowadays. Neil would write a song and Richie Furey would sing it. But I feel like, he was not the songwriter that Neil ever was, Richie Furey. None of his songs really just, I don't know. They just, I feel like those albums are defined by the Stills songs and the Neil songs.
Completely.
I don't know. How, who would you, what is your, what did you listen to these records again, Mike?
I haven't recently, but I was more familiar with Buffalo Springfield than say the Birds.
Sure.
You know, because of the Neil Young connection. So I did listen to them at very early date. Mm-hmm. They were stronger, you know, as far as putting out albums. The albums are pretty solid too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and it really is only, it's three albums and one of them kind of came out after the fact.
Right.
Last time around there was the first record self-titled.
Yeah. The first record was Buffalo Springfield.
Then it's Buffalo Springfield again.
Yes.
And then it's Last Time Around.
Last Time Around.
And, they had been, cause they were falling apart. And they kind of fell apart and then kind of cobbled a third record together.
Yeah.
But of the Buffalo Springfield records, I mean, it's like you're talking about so many, like Stephen Stills was on fire in Buffalo Springfield.
It was right from the start.
Right from the start. Like, for what it's worth, he writes,
"It's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down."
He writes, "Sit Down, I Think I Love You." What else? Go and Say Goodbye is on that first record. And Neil has Burned is a really big one.
Been burned and with both feet on.
And then
Nowadays Clancy Can't Even Sing.
Yeah. And then it's so funny that when you think of like Buffalo Springfield, Neil Young's kind of like his thing was to do these weirdly orchestrated slow songs that were like not the most rockin' songs necessarily between like, you know, like what is it? Why am I blank? Expecting to Fly is one of them, and Broken Arrow.
Did you see them in Long River? They were there to wave to you.
And these songs that just were so produced.
Yeah.
When you think of the road Neil Young went down as an artist, it's like he was not somebody who was obsessed with overproduction or just layering of instruments. It's so much about the feel and the moment in so much of what he's done. But and at that point he was like a studio guy, animal.
I think that's something we'll talk a little bit more too about with the 6970 episode, with, you know, that first record, the first solo album, Neil Young is so orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
And then he immediately shifts gears and he's with Crazy Horse.
Yeah. He finds these guys that play this very kind of like, it's so much of it is feeling and so much of it is just energy and just force. And the other guys did not get why Neil played with Crazy Horse. Like, they didn't,
they
like
hated Crosby, them.
Crosby was just like, thought they were just like a bar band, and like, why are you lowering yourself to play with these amateur guys? But he saw the thing in it that made that he saw the value in that, and these other guys didn't see it. But early on, he was not like the rock guy. Like Stills has like Bluebird.
Listen to my bluebird laugh. She can't tell you why.
And and just like Rock and Roll Woman. These songs that are just like
rockers.
Real rockers. I mean, you could, for me personally, I would say that Stills, Like Buffalo Springfield is slightly more Stills' group than Neil's group in terms of like what these records were. Like, Stills just delivers over and over on these things. Like, he's so dominant on it.
Yeah. Mr. Soul was a rocker, but yeah, still Mr. not Soul, like
definitely.
Yeah, but not to like the degree of like, you know, Rock and Roll Woman or something.
Yeah, but he just like, it's like Neil was still figuring himself out a little bit here. I think Stills knew who he was. Like, some of these Stills songs on those records, you just know he already has this really good idea about what he wants to do and who he's going to be. And like even a song like 4 Days Gone is kind of like that sounds, that's like the sound. That's like the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young sound is already like fully, like he's arrived at it.
And I think that, you know, towards the end, like you can hear Neil starting to become more of what we would hear from Neil in the 70s with like, I Am a Child.
Yes.
And stuff like that. That's like, you get hints of it. But yeah. I will say, like, we haven't touched on one of my all-time favorite Neil songs in general, which is Out of My Mind.
Out of my mind, and I just can't take it anymore.
Off of Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah.
Which is one of the best.
No, it's a great song. It's such a funny... It's such a funny thing that they were just these two guys who were so young at that point, no pun intended.
20. Yeah.
Pat, any thoughts on, did you listen to the Buffalo Springfield records?
Unfortunately, I did not.
Well, you got to.
I wish I did, but I'm sorry.
They're great. They're great records, man. And I can't wait to hear what you think when you do listen to them because
there are
some solid tracks on here.
What songs do you know of those, though? Do you know? I mean, you know For What It's Worth.
How does it go?
That's the one that's like, oh, you better stop. Hey, what's that sound?
Oh, yeah, that's them?
Yeah, that's them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
Mr. Soul?
How's that one go?
Boom, 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 boom. Well, hello, Mr. Soul. I dropped by just to pick up a raisin.
I don't think I know that.
Well, you got an adventure ahead of you because some of these things... I'd say if you listen to that second album, if you listen to the first two albums, Pat, I think you'll appreciate what they were. Like Rock and Roll Woman, you'll know also. That's like la da 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 la. There's a woman. You'll know it if you hear it.
Okay.
When you hear it, you'll be like, oh, I know this.
Yeah.
But they burned bright and then flamed out. So what is the high water mark for Stills and Young in Buffalo Springfield? What are we looking at?
For me, for Stills, I mean you've got For What It's Worth, but I want to kind of look on the outside of that. I think Bluebird's always stuck out for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Bluebird is really I just think it's such an amazing song. It's got such amazing guitar playing on it. And I don't even know what a low point would be. I don't even know. I think the low points in Buffalo Springfield for me are the other guys.
Yeah, like A Child's Claim to Fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been big on like Richie Furay stuff, and it's like, I'm not going to listen to Poco.
Yeah. So, Mike, what would be like high water mark, low water mark for Buffalo Springfield with Stills and Young for you?
Yeah, I would say Bluebird. And I had like a double album. It was like Greatest Hits. And it had I guess maybe it was a live version that wasn't on the studio album.
Okay.
And it was really good. I mean, it was like, you know, over 7 minutes long. And it was just sort of Stills at his best. Mr. Soul and I'm a Child. Those are the Neil songs that stand out.
Yeah.
I wasn't such a big fan of the... Yeah, the songs with the different movements in them, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was a little jarring after, you know, it came from Neil Young after being a fan of his, and then I went back to the Buffalo Springfield, and so I was like, yeah, what's this?
Yeah, you know? these like weirdly kind of like precious songs.
Yeah, but Expecting to Fly is beautiful though.
Oh no, I love Expecting to Fly. I would say for me, Neil Young's best on for Buffalo Springfield is Expecting to Fly or Mr. Yeah. Soul.
There you stood on the edge of your feather, expecting to fly.
Those to me are the ones I would just that those just define his contribution of that, and you could just hear that it's him, like mm-hmm. like it's clearly him finding it, you know. So if we had to rank the four members for what they did before before this starts, because this is episode zero again,
right, of
this show, and then we'll start properly with 69 and 70. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, 69, 70 will be the first episode.
So the pre, I'm gonna put mine together, and then you can put yours together.
I know.
Just rank 1 through 4 best to worst of the members. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Pat, do you have a ranking?
Based on what I've learned, yes.
Just do the letters.
Okay.
Like Crosby's, just C.
Got it. We'll
go from best to worst.
Okay, am I starting?
Yeah.
Okay, so I will give best is C, based on his accomplishments in the Birds.
Okay, so you're saying C, then?
And then N.
Okay.
And then, let's see, who's left here?
S and Y. You got Stills and Young to go.
Wait, I'm sorry, I messed up. So I was going by first name.
Okay.
So yeah. C-Y, then it's kind of a toss-up. It's kind of a tie for last. I don't know.
C-Y, then you have S or N. Who goes next? Like the Huskies or Buffalo Spring, or for what it's worth? What do you like?
Let's do N and S.
Okay. Mike?
He's not even on the call anymore.
You summon a bitch.
What?
Mike, you summon a bitch. Well, let's go to Jason.
Okay. I'm going to say S, Y, C, N.
Well, Jason, I'm going to say, here's mine. S, Y, C, N. We're on the same page.
Look there at it that. Is. Because Stills was on fire.
Stills was on fire. Stills was clearly brimming with ideas and brimming with enthusiasm. And really, there's stuff that I've taken away from that David Brown audiobook that is also available in non-audio form. That is, he was so Stills was so driven to succeed, and you can just feel it coming from him on the, like, and he made no bones about it. And if you watch video of Buffalo Springfield, there's one video of them playing on a talk show, and Stills is in a suit with a cowboy hat on and is like doing this like strut around the stage that is so funny because it's like old country and new country at the same time. And they were also some of the first people to start incorporating these country elements into music. I know the band gets a lot of credit for that, but it's like, man, you listen to these Buffalo Springfield records, it's like there's so much country in the mix on these things. And they were definitely incorporating a lot of styles and a lot of feels all at once. And they pulled the psychedelic stuff off better than the Birds did. I feel outside of 8 Miles High, I think the Neil stuff is better than like the Mind Gardens, for example.
Yeah, 1000%. Because it was out there, but it also, like, I don't know, it made you feel in a way that, like, listening to, you know, one of Crosby's tracks like that, where you're more like, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Like, you get, like, I get weepy sometimes listening to Expecting to Fly.
Oh, absolutely. I get it completely. I love it. Do we have Mike or no? No Mike?
No Mike. Okay. But I think Young is second place, mainly because, you know, he did contribute some truly, truly amazing songs in that period.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but he just, I feel like Stills was just, had Stills knew who he was a little bit more than Neil did at this point.
Yeah.
So
Crosby, because of his, I agree with Pat in terms of his success with the Birds. I mean, that was huge.
Yeah.
And then Nash, you can't win them all.
I can't win them all.
Can't win them all. But I will also say, you know, as we go through this podcast, Stills ain't going to be on top very much.
No. No, that's the whole thing. Stills, you enjoy it while it lasts, my friend.
Yeah.
All right, are we mic free?
I think we're mic free. He's not answering.
Well, let's just we'll get his ranking at the beginning of the next show.
Yes.
We'll do that.
And I know people are like, what is this? It's like, it's gonna, this, man, we're just gonna start cooking this thing. This is episode zero. We got to start somewhere.
You got to look at the records that we're going to cover in the next podcast.
Yeah.
You've got Neil Young, Neil Young. You have Neil Young with Crazy Horse. Everybody knows this is Nowhere. You have Crosby, Stills, and Nash first album. You have their second album, Deja Vu. We have After the Gold Rush. And then we also have Stephen Stills' self-titled solo record.
Yeah.
I'm glad you just said all that because I had no idea we were going to listen to all those.
Yeah.
Well, what about If I Can Only Remember My Name? What year is that?
That's 71.
71. So that will not, that'll be in the episode after that. So yeah, so a lot to cover. And it's going to be worth it. It's going to be fun. And everybody, we're doing stuff. This is for Patreon people. People give over patreon.com/thebestshow. And we're just going to have fun and do stuff. Yeah. Keep everybody entertained. And write us and let us know what's up and what you want to hear. If you think of categories you want us to rank with this, let us know. And we'll get into that. And
give us your thoughts on what we've talked about.
Yes,
we'll read them. We'll read them during this. And this will be on the free feed down the line as well.
Absolutely. So thanks for listening. And we'll do another one of these. And we'll keep them going. And we'll keep having fun. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, and love the one you're with.
Love. And I guess, do we each have to have a sign-off, everyone? Like, so that's your sign-off.
Yeah.
Love the one you're with.
You love the one you're with.
Okay. So Jason says, you do the official sign-off then.
Yeah. So everybody, love the one you're with.
Well, can we give you some ideas? Instead of that fast, choppy stuff, see, it's supposed to be a long, smooth, kind of slow-flowing thing, you know? Feel like a boat, not feel like horses clopping or something, you know? It's supposed to be long, kind of smooth things.